athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Whoa, whoa. This is how we're going to kick things off today here on Box to Row. Rest in peace to the one and only Frankie Beverly, as well as to James Earl Jones. Been a tough week in terms of passings, and you won't find two bigger people in their respective industries. Thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. I am your host, Donald Ware. The National Football League kicked off last week, getting ready to go into week two. The Jets, I know Aaron Rodgers is telling everybody to relax, but try telling that to Jets fans who have been relaxing for the longest time, okay? Yeah, it may have only been one game, and it may have been against, as I indicated last week, maybe the second best team in the National Football League. But I thought that certainly the Jets defense in particular would have played better. Boy, the Carolina Panthers, Bryce Young in some real, real trouble. And then my Washington Commanders, look, Jaden Daniels looked pretty good. Actually, as a matter of fact, the defense looked pretty bad, particularly in the pass defense, which I knew was going to be a problem, particularly on at the cornerback position, unfortunately. But look, week two, maybe to serve better for all three of those teams and perhaps your team if your team didn't do as well as on last week. So it wasn't a lot of, in HBCU football in week two, not a whole lot of necessarily high profile games per se, a lot of rivalry games at the FCS versus Division II level, the Miles in Alabama States of the world, the A&Ts in Winston-Salem States of the world. And look, every FCS team came out of that one with a victory. Now, that A&T game against Winston-Salem State was close. Winston-Salem State came to play, and they have, it looks like the Rams going to have a pretty good football team this year. Maybe a surprise challenge in the CIAA this year. But Jackson State defeated Lane pretty handily. You know, Southern defeated Savannah State pretty handily. You know, Grambling defeated Tuskegee. So all of these, a lot of these games, you know, Arkansas, even as this wasn't a Division II game, Arkansas Pine Bluff beat up on Arkansas Baptist, who was an NAIA program out of the Sooner Athletic Conference, the same conference that Texas College and Langston play in as well. So you had a lot of those matchups, and really, you know, Alabama A&M rolling past Kentucky State. So a lot of these matchups you had. And then on the other side, the HBCU FCS teams playing the either Power Four or FBS programs. I mean, FAMU falling to Miami. I mean, I don't think there's a big surprise there. I was a little bit surprised that Texas Southern fell to Rice 69-7, but you can understand the sentiment in terms of D1, D2, or FCS and FBS. Now, a big win by Prairie View A&M over Northwestern State. That was a really big win for Prairie View A&M, who really needed to rebound after falling to Texas Southern, surprisingly, right? That was a good win, but you had Alcorn State getting blanked by Vanderbilt. So, you know, you had some matchups last week. We got some better matchups this week, some conference games begin. I would say the game of the week, and we'll preview. I don't know if we'll have time to preview today, the HBCU National Game of the Week. But of course, you can always go to our to the Box to Row YouTube page and check out the HBCU National Game of the Week. Well, look, we've got to talk about, of course, the HBCU National Players of the Week, and it's been a good start for the Shaw Bears. Shaw right now is 2-0 on the season, coming from behind to defeat Albany State in a high-scoring football game, 43-40. And we'll wrap up that game on this week's Box to Row Blitz, which may be able to be found on a radio station near you. Again, HBCU National Players of the Week, the quarterback for Shaw, Christian Peters, had a phenomenal game. 5 touchdowns. He threw for 322 yards. He rushed for another 70-plus yards. He almost had 400 yards of total offense. Of Shaw's 8 scores, he was involved in 7 of them. He was involved in 7 of Shaw's 8 scores in that particular football game. One of Shaw's scores was actually a safety, and you could read more about this young man. And by the way, for those that listen to this program, I've had some people, you know, I had one person that emailed me one time and said, well, who really cares about HBCU football? You know, because it wasn't quote unquote big time football in his opinion. Well, you know, HBCU football matters to a lot of different people. There is a very much a historical element to HBCU football. Some of the greatest players to ever play, and not even HBCU football, HBCU sports, some of the greatest players to ever play in any, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, whatever the sport is, came from HBCU. So it does matter, and it matters to a lot of people. And, you know, Christian Peters, I'm on the Shaw call every Tuesday. They have a press conference every Tuesday and talk with Adrian Jones, the head coach, and then a couple of the players. And I tell you what, Christian Peters, I've talked with a lot of quarterbacks. I've heard a lot of quarterbacks talk in press conferences. That young man is extremely intelligent, okay, because he's going to break down the plays, and he's going to tell you whether it was cover 0 or cover 2. And he's going to be a coach. When his playing days are all said and done, he's going to be a coach. He is very, very bright. So don't try to tell me about, you know, does it really matter? These guys can play too. And that's why I always say, we can talk about various divisions and who's in this division and if this is FCS and this is Division II and this is FBS. At the end of the day, it's all college football. It's not the National Football League. So I think, you know, just listening to him talk the last couple of weeks, he's been very impressive. And then his play, of course, matched the particular numbers. And then also, Howard quarterback Jashawn Scroggins, also named the HBCU National Player of the Week, 279 yards of total offense, and he helped to lead. He had also had 122 yards rushing on 13 carries, 229 yards passing. But what he was able to do is he put the Bison in position, moved them right down the field on their last possession. He had 55 of the, I mean, matter of fact, he had all of the total yards that Howard had on the last possession, which was 55 yards of total offense, which led to the field goal that won the Bison the football game. And so, you talk about those two young men, the HBCU National Players of the Week, Howard defeating Mercyhurst by 1.32-31, in part because of the play of Howard quarterback Jashawn Scroggins. You can read about both Jashawn Scroggins and also Christian Peters on the Box to Row website. So let me set the table in terms of guests for you today here on Box to Row. Johnson C. Smith is 2-0 on the season, coming off a win over Morehouse. First game of the season, a win over Tuskegee, and the Golden Bulls currently tied for third place in the HBCU Division II coaches poll. So Maurice Flowers, the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith, going to join us today here on the program. Also joining us today here on Box to Row. North Carolina head football coach Mack Brown, the legendary Mack Brown, going to join us on the program. North Carolina Central and UNC, or and UNC play on Saturday in Chapel Hill. And when I was looking at this thing, I couldn't believe. I know, you know, North Carolina, not, NCCU has played a lot of, has played some FBS opponents, but it was mostly Duke, and it was more of a, it was more of a Durham thing, where it was like a classic type of game. I just think that Duke was just winning that game so handily every year that they stopped playing that game. And I guess a year or two, I may have confused Duke with UNC, thinking that North Carolina Central and UNC had played before, but they never have played. This is going to be the first meeting. So Mack Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina, going to join us today here on the program. Look, you've got a couple of different matchups. I mentioned the Battle of the Bay. The Norfolk State and Hampton game is definitely one to look out for. There are a couple of conference games that are happening on today as conference play. It doesn't get fully underway, but you've got a couple of teams that are playing in some conference games. You still got some money games. For instance, Prairie View A&M is going up to Michigan State to play. Bethune-Cookman going to Western Michigan to play. You've got some like games, FCS games. Alabama State's at Samford. You know, some of the other games. And then another big one is, of course, Southern at Jackson State. And that is, in fact, a conference game. Our thoughts and prayers here at Box to Row go out to the family of Jaylek Harrington. He's a line was a linebacker on the West Virginia State football team. He was shot and killed in Charleston, West Virginia on Wednesday. And my thoughts and prayers with his family, with the West Virginia State University community, and then also with the West Virginia State football program led by head coach John Pennington, who we've talked with and had on this show many, many times. Definitely very, very tragic. And again, our hearts and prayers go out to Jaylek, the family of Jaylek Harrington and the West Virginia State community. Again, still to come here on Box to Row, Johnson C. Smith head football coach Maurice Flowers, and UNC head football coach Mack Brown. But up next, I'm going to discuss the Tyreek Hill incident.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way.
Home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Emmanuel Wilson, running back for the Green Bay Packers. You were ultra productive, initially starting off at Johnson C. Smith.
It was a crazy experience, really, because I didn't play my freshman year coming into college due to grades. But, you know, my sophomore year, and that was my freshman year playing on the field. Tried to take advantage of every opportunity that I had out there, trying to learn from Coach Blunt, just trying to attack days and really watch what I was eating. I was a vegan then, but ain't a vegan no more. Can't be a vegan.
Not in the league, right?
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Welcome back to Box to Row. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can do so. Hit us up via Twitter or X at Box to Row, BOXTOROW, or on Facebook, BOX, the number to ROW. Follow us while you're there. Box to Row now on TikTok as well, at BOXTOROW, and on Instagram, BOXTOROW. So I had a chance to look at the Tyreek Hill arrest, detainment, whatever you want to call it, the body cam, the police, the Miami-Dade Police Department body cam in its entirety. And when I first heard about it, I saw it on TikTok. As a matter of fact, it was Adam Schefter who had released a part of something, I guess one of the passerbys was kind of filming. So you didn't really know what was going on. And so, you know, a lot of people are talking about it during the course of the week. I try not to listen to what others are saying because I want to be able to watch the entire body cam in its entirety so I can make my own assessment. Context is everything, okay? And I'm going to say this. I was absolutely appalled by what I saw. Not only that, Tyreek Hill did nothing wrong. I watched the entire body cam prior to. Now, of course, he was speeding. Apparently, if you listen to the body cam, you listen to what he said, the speed limit was 40 miles an hour. He was going 55. I mean, right near the stadium. I don't know. That may be considered reckless driving, which can carry points. I mean, I guess technically it could be considered a jailable offense, although it rarely happens that way. I'm not talking about what he did, because he did something that most people do, and that was to speed. Who doesn't speed, right? What I'm talking about is, and I've heard people say, and I'll say this, I think that if Tyreek Hill wanted this to be less than it was after a while, not initially, but after a while, it could have been. That said, from a lawful perspective, he did nothing wrong. I think sometimes police mistake the way that people talk to them gives them the right to treat people how they want. And in particular, black men. You don't see this kind of thing happening when you have white folks that are disrespectful to the police when talking to them. Now, I'm not even going to sit back and say, I mean, was Tyreek Hill disrespectful? I mean, I think that's the question as I think back on the video that I have to ask myself. Not necessarily. I mean, could he have handled it in a different way? Yes, I think he could have. But even if you say that Tyreek Hill was disrespectful, let's say for the sake of argument that he was, that does not give the police the right to pull him, or that in particular, well, it was that police officer, and then he actually had some help from another police officer, because once they had put him in handcuffs, he was standing up. They wanted him to sit on the curb. He asked why he had to sit on the curb. And then another police officer just came and yanked him down to the curb. And he was complaining about his knee hurting. Of course, he did end up playing in the game, but he did have surgery. He was talking about the surgery that he had, and his knee was hurting. Again, I'm going to say it again. Tyreek Hill did nothing lawfully wrong other than speed, okay? Maybe if he doesn't say as much, the situation is just de-escalated a little bit more, but he has the right to say what he wants. to a degree. He wasn't threatening. See, the police feel threatened, particularly by black men. That's the problem. You know what I mean? Like, that's the problem. Because I even heard one of the other police officers. You couldn't really see the police officers. You saw the body cam. I mean, you could see them, but I don't want to characterize them by race or color. What I will say is one of the police officers, when Tyreek Hill said, and let me quote him in terms of what he said. He said, "I'm just being a black man in America." One of the police officers said, "We are of color too." Okay. Being of color and being black, first of all, is two different things. Let's be clear about that. Second of all, again, it does not give the police the right to take someone out of their car in the manner in which, because what happened was initially when the police officer came up to the window, Tyreek Hill rolled his car down or rolled his window down. He said something to the police officer. The police officer turned, Tyreek Hill rolled his window up, and then the police officer came back. All right, he came back to confront him some more. At that time, Tyreek Hill did not roll his window back down. He said he wasn't going to roll it back down. The police officer asked him to get out, asked him to roll the window down. He didn't a couple of times, told him to get out of the car. Now, you know, he didn't have to get out of the car, but he did. He went to get out of the car. That's when he was sort of tackled, arrested, and then after that, the other police officer came and pretty much slammed him to the ground. Again, mouthing off does not give the police the right to take someone out of their car and handcuff them the way that Miami-Dade Police Department did. The Miami-Dade Police Department should be embarrassed for a couple of reasons. I mean, it's not even it is about the Miami Dolphins, because not only was Tyreek Hill involved in this, Calais Campbell was involved too, because he was just trying to make sure that his teammate, just trying to make sure that Tyreek Hill was okay, and he ended up getting put in handcuffs as well because the officer asked him to stand back about 25 feet. He didn't really comply with it maybe as quickly. And I don't know if he was 25 feet away or not. That's the other thing. I have no idea if he was 25 feet away or not. The police officer didn't feel as though, I put it like that he was 25 feet away. He got put in handcuffs. Then it was interesting because the same police officer, I believe that was the one that cuffed Tyreek Hill when passerbys were coming by, then said, "You need to be 50 feet away." Well, is it 25 feet or 50 feet? What's the law say? Not what you as the police officer determine what it should be. What does the law say? See, that's the problem a lot of times with police. They're not about enforcing the laws. They're about enforcing their own agendas. Okay? And this happens way too many times to the brothers. As Tyreek Hill said appropriately during the press conference after the football game, he did say he wanted to, hopefully that this could be quelled and that they could come together. And he's got a better attitude than I would have had. But like he said, what if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? What if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? Because the officers initially didn't know until one officer came to the arresting officer or the officer that handcuffed him. And he said, "Well, you know who that is, right? He's the star player. He's a star player for the Miami Dolphins." And the guy was like, "Oh, yeah." You know, so I think at that point they knew they were in trouble. They should be embarrassed. Not only that, all of the officers that were involved, because I think one of the officers towards the latter part of the video was they were talking. Tyreek Hill and this officer were talking, and I guess the officer was trying to explain to him what was going on. And like Tyreek Hill said, or why he had been handcuffed and pulled to the ground, and like Tyreek Hill said appropriately, does that give you a reason to snatch me out of my car? And he's absolutely correct. If there are some kind of civil rights violations that can be placed against these police officers, They need to be placed upon these police officers to the highest extent allowable by law. You don't get to enforce your own laws. You enforce the laws that are on the book. I think that's a lot of times where police officers are confused. They think they're in charge. They're bully-like. And I don't want to place this on all police officers, but I'm talking about the ones. I mean, look at George Floyd. Look at any number of different incidences where this went badly. Go all the way back to Rodney King. When Rodney King posed absolutely no threat, those officers thought they were going to get away with that, and probably a practice by the LA Police Department, if not now, at that time. They thought they weren't going to get away with that. And ultimately, they didn't. They initially did, but then I believe ultimately that they did not once the federal government was pressured to come in and step in and get some kind of justice for Rodney King. Do your job. You're paid to do a job. I think Bushwick Bill said it best on the song My City Under Siege, Ghetto Boys 1990. Bushwick Bill said, police brutality is now a formality. They're kicking our you know what, and we're paying their salary. Do your job. We're paying your salary to do a job to enforce the laws. When we need help, certainly we're going to call the police. We don't, and it's been plenty of times where we've needed help, called the police, and still ended up getting shot, killed, whatever the case may be. Stop being afraid of black people. Period. It was inexcusable in terms of what the Miami-Dade Police Department did. It should be utterly embarrassed. If it has not already, it needs to come forward and feel that blame. It needs to do town halls and feel what the people have to say to them, because that's how you can start to make it right. Otherwise, it can't be right, because what they did to Tyreek Hill, to Calais Campbell, and to other passerbys was wrong and it was inexcusable. We'll be right back. This is your weekly edition of the Boxer Row Blitz. I'm Donald Ware. First, I'm going to take you to Albany, Georgia, where the Albany State Golden Rams were breaking in their new blue field at the Albany State University Coliseum. We're going to pick things up with about 4.5 remaining in the fourth quarter. Albany State with possession of the football and the 33-30 lead.
Knowles ready to go here. First and 10. He wants to pass here and fires it and makes the catch. 10-5, touchdown!
33 yards to Jameel Williams, and the Golden Rams led 40-30. There was life for the Bears, and with a little less than 2 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter.
Back to pass, Peters here on first down. Steps and fires to the end zone. Caught. Just like that, a touchdown.
Christian Peters to Ashawn Belcher from 17 yards, and the Bears pulled to within 40-37. The Bears would then force the Golden Rams to turn the ball over on downs, get the ball back with 1:17 remaining, moving down the field, and on the eighth play of the drive.
Peters, boy, all day to throw the ball. They're spying him this time. They're running around in the backfield. It's going to be caught. Touchdown.
After all these years, you should know him by now. My main man, Freddie Fresh Suttles, on the Albany State Sports Radio Network. Once again, Peters to Belcher, this time from 28 yards with 8 seconds remaining, propelled the Bears to the 43-40 victory over Albany State. Shaw now 2-0 on the season. By the way, Christian Peters named the HBCU National Player of the Week, the quarterback for Shaw. For more information, you can log on to BoxToRow.com. Now, to Fayetteville, North Carolina, where the Fayetteville State Broncos trailed UNC Pembroke 31-28 with less than 25 seconds remaining.
And since Daniels steps up out of pressure, he's got room. inside of the five, stretching to the outside, and he's in for the touchdown. With 17 seconds to go, the Broncos have the lead. Damari Daniels on an 11-yard scamper.
That audio courtesy of the FSU Broncos Sports Network. The Broncos went on to defeat UNC Pembroke 35-31. Now to Norfolk, Virginia, for the battle of the states between Norfolk State and Virginia State. We're going to pick things up in the fourth quarter. Norfolk State with possession, trailing by the slimmest of margins, 21-17.
Hands the ball to King, cuts up the middle, across the 40, 45, midfield, broken tackle, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Norfolk State, 64-yard run by King.
My man, John Emmett, on WVST in Petersburg. Norfolk State avenged last year's loss to the Trojans, held on to win this one 28-23, the first win of the season for the Spartans. To Charleston, South Carolina, for the matchup between South Carolina State and the Citadel. Let's pick things up early in the fourth quarter with South Carolina State leading 16-13 and driving.
Gives it to Shaw. Shaw easily in the end zone. Touchdown, South Carolina State with 13-23 to go in the ballgame. It's South Carolina State 22, the Citadel 13.
The extra point was true, and the Bulldogs led 23-13. The Citadel would respond and pull to within three on the next possession. Now we're going to move to late in the ballgame with less than 60 seconds remaining. Fourth and seven for the Citadel, looking to extend the game.
Shotgun snap, here we go. Back to pass, Bennett in trouble, throws it out there, incomplete pass.
And that should be the ballgame.
And it was my guys, Ernest Robinson, Bill Hamilton, on the Bulldog Football Radio Network. South Carolina State with a 23-20 victory over the Citadel. And in Greensboro, Lee has the snap. Lee on the run. Lee looking. Now he tosses it wide open. He missed him, and the game is over. He had the tight end wide open in the end zone, and A&T's going to escape with the 27-20 overtime victory over Winston-Salem State. Yours truly and Al Swan on the Aggie Sports Radio Network. The Aggies and the Rams now both 1-1 on the season. Box to Row, the radio show, airs weekly on radio stations across the country as well as on SiriusXM. To listen to the show or for more information, visit BoxToRow.com. We're going to keep things moving here on the program. Say hello to a legend. As a matter of fact, his 16th season in his second stint as the head football coach at North Carolina. The Tar Heels are 2-0 on this season. Got a home tilt on Saturday against North Carolina Central. Of course, he's a College Football Hall of Famer. He is Mac Brown. He joins us here on the program. Coach Brown, we appreciate the time. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Donald. Thanks for having me on. We're excited about the game this weekend.
Absolutely. I want to start here. Your thoughts on the 2-0 start to this point for the Tar Heels?
Donald, we've done really well in the beginning. We started 2-0 five of our 6 years here. So we've got this part down. And then we were 9-1, and then we didn't finish right. And then we were 6-0, and we didn't finish right. So everything that we've done since last January was try to rebuild this team, rebuild this culture to be a tougher run, play action, offensive football team, a more aggressive, better tackling defensive football team to stop the run and be dominant in the kicking game. And through 2 weeks, we're really, really pleased with who we are and where we are and where we're headed. We've had the two NFL quarterbacks, and now we've got two inexperienced quarterbacks. We get one starter and he gets hurt and he's out for the year. So we're trying to find our way at quarterback, but we're trying to play a lot of players. We're trying to be two deep or three deep. We've had some injuries already, and we're just rotating them in and letting them go. So this should be a fun challenge for us this weekend.
Absolutely. Let me take you back. We're going to talk about North Carolina Central. Just, I got to take you back a couple of weeks ago because that was a big win for your program against Minnesota to start the season. I think when you think about Power 4 football, the ACC sort of gets a bit of a knock. You beat a Big Ten opponent in Minnesota on the road. by the way, speak to that, how you were able to do it. You get the late field goal, and then they miss a late field goal.
Yeah, Donald, it was perfect medicine for what we had preached. We had to go to a tough place. We had to go to a Big Ten place. We had to go to a place that had an older defensive line that could stop the run. We had to go to a place that has an older offensive line. Three of those guys will be in the NFL next year that could run the ball and survive. And we did that. In fact, the Big Ten was 17-1 that weekend, and we were the one. So it was good for us to play a tough opponent on the road. Then we had to come back and play a talented Charlotte team that's got 56 transfers that didn't play well against JMU in their opener, and see if we could keep our heads straight and not walk around with all the distractions and think we were being pretty cool, and then get beat in that game. And we played hard. We played well. We left some points on the board, but again, there's some things that we can improve. So I really feel good about this team after 2 weeks. And now this week we're practicing, and they've talked to us about they want to play to a standard. They don't want to talk about who we're playing. They just want to play, and they want to have fun, and they want to be the best they can be. And we always say it, Donald, not many of us do it, but when you're a coach-led team, you can be good. When you're a player-led team, you can be great. And right now, we've got tremendous leaders on this team that are having fun and dictating a lot of things that we're doing, and I like the way they're handling themselves.
Mac Brown is the head football coach at North Carolina. He joins us here on the program. So I thought what was interesting when I looked at this, I didn't realize that the Tar Heels in North Carolina Central, with the close proximity, had never played before. I know the Tar Heels had played A&T back in, this was before you had come back in 2015. You're familiar with smaller colleges. I didn't even realize you coached at App State back in the day when it was in 1AA. So speak to what this game in particular means to the communities of Durham and Chapel Hill.
Donald, first let me say what it means to me. I love Coach Bill Hayes, who's had such an impact in this state with not only race, not only sports, but he's touched so many lives, but HBCUs, and he's still raising money. At this point, and he'll be an honorary captain Saturday. Bishop Harris was the first minority assistant coach in the ACC. I talked to the staff this morning about that. I can't imagine you going in for an interview and there's nobody in this whole conference that looks like it, and you're wondering if you're going to get the job or not. Then you get the job, and you are the only minority coach in a whole league. And we all talk about race today. Wonder how you felt walking in for that interview and walking out. And Bishop and I coached together at LSU. We lost him last spring, so his family will honor him as one of the representatives for honorary captain before the game starts. There's a gentleman named George Bulldog Smith who worked for me here, and he's been an associate athletic director at North Carolina Central for 30 years. Right. And he worked for me as a strength coach. We had Mad Dog, Bulldog. That's why I couldn't remember his last name. I always called him Bulldog. Bulldog and then Shep Dog. So we had the dogs doing our strength program. And I thought he should be honored because he's touched so many lives with kids at both schools. And that was such an important thing. And then Rod Broadway, he played here. Coach Hayes won 2 HBCU national championships. Rod Broadway won 5. And he did so much for not only this community, but this state. So when we played Florida A&M a couple of years ago, I thought it was great because we could send money back to the HBCUs, but also honor that group of schools and coaches. And I thought it was even better when we could do it here. Trey Oliver and I have been around each other some. I've met him some, the head coach at Central. I really like him. He's fun. He's done an amazing job. They've won more games in 2 years than we have. They've won 19 games in 2 years, won the Celebration Bowl 2 years ago, and went to the playoffs and lost to Richmond last year. So he has done an amazing job at Central. And that's what this weekend's all about. It's to bring attention to HBCUs, bring attention to history about race in not only our state, but our sport and our community, and honor a school and try to help them get some money moving forward.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because, again, in that Florida A&M game, it was either 2 or 3 years ago, and you all made it an HBC. It was like a – I forget the title of it, but it was, as you mentioned, to honor HBCUs, which I thought was really, really cool. Because you have this legendary status, right? Like, you may not look at it that way, but it is what it is. Right. You've won a national championship. You've got a 65% winning percentage. You're in the College Football Hall of Fame and still coaching, I might add. What do you remember about those days at Texas and then, of course, winning that national championship in 2005?
I remember winning the national championship against a USC team that had two Heisman Trophy winners on it. And they'd won 36 straight. I think we'd won 25 or 28 straight. And I remember standing out on the field before the game and standing there with Pete Carroll and looking at their team. And Greg Davis, our offensive coordinator, came up and Pete walked off. And I said, "Greg, man, they got a great looking team. Wow." And he said, "Well, turn around. You got a great looking team, too." And then it was one of the best games in college football history. And it was so fun to win with 16 seconds left. And then just talking to the kids afterwards, because very few people get that feeling. And I remember asking Coach Royal as we were walking off after the game, I said, "What does this mean, Coach, to me in my life?" And he says, "It's ruined you for the rest of your life. Very few people get to do this, and you did." And he said, "Now you're going to want to do it again. So it's probably going to ruin it for you." But it's a moment that I remember because President Bush calls the next morning and says, "I don't know if I'm the best father. I don't know if I'm the best husband. I don't know if I'm the best president. But you do know you have the best football team in college football." And that's a very special moment in your life.
No doubt about it. A couple of more thoughts with Mac Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina. I want to get your thoughts on the college football expansion.
I think it's good. Every sport had a playoff system, really, but us. We had four teams, and we had the BCS before that. So... Donald, I think it's good, and I have some concerns. It's good that we're going to have a system like everybody else, and it gives more people a chance to get in the playoff and win a national championship. It means that a loss early doesn't put you out if you still win your conference championship. So I think there's some positive things. More people will have a chance. The second part of that is the season's going to be a lot longer for those that are winning. So what do we do with the regular season? And how do we make sure that the fans who are going to go to all these games, the families that are going to go see their sons play at all these games, have enough money? And how are we going to make sure that we as coaches adjust our practices so these guys are healthy through 16 games and instead of 12 or 13? So all those things are things we need to look at. The other thing I'm really concerned about, if we've got 65 Power 4 teams, And we're sitting here looking at bowl games, I don't want bowl games to go away. Because if you've got 12 that can get in the playoff, that means there's a whole lot of teams that can never get in that playoff. They're not going to, so they need to have a reward system as well. And bowls have been wonderful for all of us. It's a great experience for the players and the families. So I don't want that team that is never going to be good enough to get in the playoff not to have something to look forward to or to achieve. So we need to still do a great job with our bowl games.
Very well said. Last thought, because I want to respect the time. Look, you were doing fabulous as an analyst on ESPN. I mean, this, you know, as you know, because you had a first time around at Carolina, did well at Texas, have been a coach for in excess, I believe now, of 35 years. What made you want to come back and do this job again now as the head football coach at North Carolina in your sixth season in the second stint?
Well, it's a great question. There's been days where my wife and I both said, "I left that job to come and do this." And we just lost. What am I doing, man? I'm sitting here. I must be sick. I got to be crazy. And coaches are a little crazy, number one, to do that. But what I felt was, as much as I love TV, I have a better purpose when I can come back here and help change people's lives. And you can give people information from behind the scenes as a coach in football and on TV. I could do that. I really like doing that. But when you're sitting there and in our team meeting and you're talking about mental health, and you said, if anybody's struggling, come and see us. This is really important to us. And a young man comes up and says, I was on a bridge two nights ago, and coach, I was going to kill myself, and you just got me. You just got me. I mean, you're talking about having a powerful purpose in someone's life. So you better be careful what you say, because they're listening. But number two, you have a chance to help growth in some lives. You have to have a chance to help change some lives. And then in some cases, you may have a chance to save some lives. And that is a powerful, powerful purpose. And Donald, that's why I came back, and that's why I'm still coaching. I love football. I love the kids that play it, the coaches that coach it. Everybody talks about the coach on the other team. I respect the coach. If he'll just act right and do right and wants to help these kids, he's doing what I'm doing. So I love P.J. Fleck. I love my relationship since Saturday with Coach Pogge down at Charlotte. We've talked numerous times, and we had never met before that. So I love the coaches that coach this game. I love the players that play it, and I love the games. I love the competition, and I love trying to get ready to play every morning. How many people can get up every morning excited about their day and have an edge and try to whip somebody else on the other side, take away something they want and move forward with it and learn from it? And that's what this wonderful game teaches you.
Wow. Again, a legend, Mack Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina. He joins us here on the program. The Tar Heels are hosting North Carolina Central this Saturday. Coach Brown, appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Tar Heels.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on, and thanks for all you do as well.
Mack Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina. Up next here on Box to Row, we're going to talk with Johnson C. Smith, head football coach, Maurice Flowers, the Golden Bulls, already out to the 2-0 start, ranked number 3 in the HBCU Division II coaches poll.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Emmanuel Wilson, running back for the Green Bay Packers. You were ultra productive, initially starting off at Johnson C. Smith.
It was a crazy experience, really, because I didn't play my freshman year coming into college due to upgrades. But, you know, my sophomore year, and that was my freshman year playing on the field. Tried to take advantage of every opportunity that I had out there, trying to learn from Coach Blunt, just trying to attack days and really watch what I was eating. I was a vegan then, but ain't a vegan no more. Can't be a vegan anymore.
Not in the league, right?
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
Track down the names making news in sports from the press box to press row. It's Donald Ware from the press box to press row.
Donald, first let me say what it means to me. I love Coach Bill Hayes, who's been had such an impact in this state with not only race, not only sports, but he's touched so many lives, but HBCUs, and he's still raising money. At this point, and he'll be an honorary captain Saturday.
UNC head football coach Mack Brown joined us in the last segment as the Tar Heels and the Eagles will meet on Saturday. The Johnson C. Smith Golden Bulls 2-0 on the season, playing some really good football, a couple of really tough wins, especially to open the season on the road in Montgomery against Tuskegee in the Red Tails Classic. In his third season as the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith is Maurice Flowers. And, of course, the Golden Bulls host Lincoln of Pennsylvania on Saturday as Coach Flowers joins us here on Box to Row. What's going on, Coach Flowers?
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to see you and glad to be on the show.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. And, of course, always appreciate you coming out to the countdown to kickoff, as you were able to do with us back in July in Durham. 2-0. This is really, really good because, I mean, I'm just saying your first season was only 2 wins. Now you're 2-0. I mean, just talk about how you're off to this really good start.
Hey, it's been a process. it has been a process. And when that first year at 2-7, it wasn't your normal 2-7. I mean, hey, we had 50 freshmen on the team. A lot of them had to play, but we lost six games by one score or less. And three of them, I believe, were overtime. So it wasn't. And then the one that we lost to Winston, that wasn't a one score game. It was 0-0 midway through the third quarter. So we started building competitiveness right there off the bat. And then year two was learning how to win. And now we're in year three. And we just look to keep improving the program. But hey, a supportive administration, fantastic coaches, recruiting well, a lot of veterans in the program, not a young team anymore. We're a veteran team now. So all those things are adding to it.
You know, you talk about outstanding coaches. You are one. I mean, I got that first season. You didn't really have a quarterback. You know how they say if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. That sort of was your deal as a quarterback guru. By the way, you're a quarterback guru. Have had a lot of success as an assistant coach, success as a head coach at Fort Valley State. What do you feel like? And last season was a really, really good season. Played in the bowl game as well. What do you feel like was the turning point in terms of turning this program around?
I just say it's consistency. We've stuck to our plan from our plan that we had day one is the same plan we're following. We have some core values that we believe in, and you know, we build everything off of our core values, and we really stress education. I mean, what I'm probably the thing I'm most proud of right now is at the end of the fall semester of 23, we had 42 young men with a 3.0 GPA or better. Well, we said we can do better. And so last semester, the spring semester of 24, we had 60 young men with a 3.0 or better. So we've been emphasizing academics from day one. If a young man's going to take his academics serious, he's going to take everything else serious. And so that's what we based everything on. And just we compete in the classroom and we compete at practice and we just have an environment of competition. We never promised anyone in recruiting, even Kavaris Crouch. I mean, that was one time a number one player in the country in high school. You're not promised a starting job. You have to come earn it. And I'll just sticking with Kavaris Crouch. I mean, when he came in, I said, hey, you'll start from the bottom and you'll work your way. And he was all for it. He was the sixth tailback when he came in here in January of 24. Six. He's number one now, but I mean, he was number six. So I'm just so happy of, you know, with our young men and the approach that they have and these coaches. I mean, you know, a lot of these coaches. I mean, David Bowser, who was at Fayetteville State 20 years, he's on the staff as my special assistant to the head coach and linebackers coach. You know, Barry Tripp was D coordinator at Fayetteville State, and we came to Fort Valley with us and now here. And then James Lott, who was at Fayetteville State, won a championship. And, you know, he's our special teams coordinator and DB coach. We just got a lot of experience on the staff, and we're a cohesive group, and we just think we lead by teaching.
No doubt about it. Maurice Flowers in his third season as the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith. He joins us here on Box to Row. Darius Ocean, can you speak to him? Your quarterback had a tremendous, well, numbers-wise, he had a really good game. And listen, you as the quarterback guru, former quarterback when you played, I know his holes in his game. I got it. But if I look at the numbers, pretty good. Three touchdowns and no interceptions.
Hey, you know what? These quarterbacks, man, you know, we've had three. This is our third year. Our first 2 years, you know, Tyrell Jackson, who came with us from Fort Valley, was injured and retired last year after a concussion. And it's just been – and then we had to play young quarterbacks. You know, you don't win normally when you play a bunch of young players – and then especially a quarterback. And that's really some of the success we're seeing at our program is that our program has really grown up. We went from playing freshmen to now they're growing up. And so we have a lot of juniors playing. And at the quarterback position, that doggone Darius Ocean, he comes in as a guy that was at Western Kentucky, then at Valdosta State, and he comes in as a junior. He's an older player. And so he's seen a lot of things. And I say his biggest asset probably besides this, you know, he has a really very, very high football IQ, but he's a very accurate passer.
The constant the last couple of years has been Brevin Caldwell. Like, this game, 9 receptions, 140 yards or more than that, 3 touchdowns in the win over Morehouse.
Yeah, at Brevin Caldwell. He came in. Again, he's a Charlotte guy. Brevin, just his freshman year, Brevin was all CIAA. And that first year, I mean, there's a lot of Tyrell Jackson. And then we had another quarterback. And so Brev had big numbers his freshman year. Sophomore year, Jackson's injured, and now we have freshman quarterbacks, and his numbers just plummeted because we had to change the focus of our of our system. When you've got young quarterbacks, you can't do the same thing as with the older guys. And so we became a little bit more conservative and just didn't throw it around the yard as much. But now that we've got a veteran behind the center, you know, we're throwing the football around. And Brevin is really he deserves everything that he's getting, because Brevin is probably one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. He really reminds me a lot of a guy I got behind me in this picture, Shamar Bridges, that we had at Fort Valley, that was with the Ravens and now playing ball in Canada.
This team that's coming in to come to play you, Lincoln of Pennsylvania. I mean, you talk about quarterbacks. They got a good one in Isaiah Freeman. He's grown, and this is junior year. They are coming off the loss. What are some of the concerns you have as it relates to the Lions?
Hey, the saying in coaching, you got a quarterback, you got a shot. And, boy, they've got one. This is our third time seeing him. My first year, that's when he was a freshman. They came to Charlotte and they beat us with a field goal, 3-2-1, game over. And you could just see then that he was special. Last season up there, man, he put on a good show. And, you know, they've got a new offensive coordinator right now. You know, the guy that was his offensive coordinator's first 2 years, they've made a change. And this new, they're just getting, you can tell they are feeling their way through right now. And they're getting ready to have an explosion. I just hope it's not against us. Right. But, you know, he has a outstanding receiving core. I mean, he doesn't have just one or two. He's got a bunch of guys that can catch the football. And he's a true dual threat quarterback. He can hurt you with his feet, and then he can hurt you with his arm and his mind. And so nothing but good things to say about Mr. Freeman, the returning offensive player of the year in the conference. So we know we've got our hands full. Our defense, they know they have their hands full. They've seen him the last 2 years, and he's made plays against us each time. So our guys know they have their hands full, and we've got to do a good job with these guys. I mean, they're fast. They have a good system, and it's going to be a tough ball game.
Yeah. Last thought, Coach Flowers, and we appreciate the time. I could really – feel your energy in terms of being back at your alma mater and the head coach. Mm-hmm. You're a Charlotte guy through and through. It took you a while to get back to Charlotte. Yes. You had a bunch of different stops. You were building something at Fort Valley State. I'm assuming when the Johnson C. Smith job came open, you were like, man, I got to go back home. I got to do it for my alma mater. What does it mean to be, in fact, the head football coach at your alma mater, Johnson C. Smith?
Wow. You know, you talked about so many things right there. I mean, Fort Valley State, outstanding place, great history and tradition in football, and being the head coach there was truly an honor. And we were building something special. We were building something special. And some of it you could see, because some of those players that we played against in the bowl game, a lot of them still there. Heck, we brought Emmanuel Wilson there. We were building something special. But the opportunity to come home and the commitment of the president, the board of trustees, just the commitment to want to build a winner. It was just, you couldn't turn it down. And, you know, having been a player here and not having success was really one of the driving factors. And here's what I know is that being a Charlottean, you know, I've seen all the talent in the Charlotte area go elsewhere. And so one of my main focuses as the head coach was to make sure that we recruited what I call the Charlotte metro area, which we call 90 minutes out of Charlotte. And so if you look at our roster, at least half of our roster is from the Charlotte metro area. And so we wanted to keep some good football players home. And at the same time, we wanted to be attractive enough to get the young men that went away. If they wanted to come back through the portal, they would. And you can see that with a lot of the transfers that we've gotten. But it's just, it's an honor. It feels great. You know, the two of the things that really hit me about being back at my alma mater, one was when we went to the bowl game, and after the game was over, I was being sent different clips of the watch parties that were going on in Charlotte at different sports bars. And that right there really hit home to me that, boy, we're doing something. We're doing something special. And it just feels good to be back at my alma mater. When I sit in front of my guys and I say, hey, I walk these halls, I was on this yard, I know up on that block, 5 minutes can turn into 2 hours, you know, up on the block, just enjoying yourself. So it feels good to be able to say that. And I'm speaking from the heart and from experience.
Again, Maurice Flowers in his third season as the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith. Currently, the Golden Bulls tied for third in the HBCU Division II poll, going to host Lincoln of Pennsylvania on Saturday. Coach Flowers, great to catch up with you again. Continued success to you and the Golden Bulls.
Thank you very much, and go Golden Bulls.
My time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Maurice Flowers, the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith, to Mack Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina, for joining us today here on the program. For more information on Box to Row, log on to our website, boxtorow.com. Check us out on all social media and YouTube. And always remember to support those that support Yo! Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.